All right. Okay, we are going to convene this committee hearing. Members, I think we had indicated that we were going to start off in policy committee, but in order to take action on the policy bills that we had heard on Monday, but we're lacking a few people, so we're going to do the opposite. We're going to go into policy at 3:15. So I'll call to order the Transportation and Public Safety Finance Division of the Finance Committee on Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. And so we will start by hearing the presentation of the governor's budget for the Department of Public Safety. And to that end, we have Commissioner Mona Doman and Deputy Commissioner Mark Donaski here. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much. And as you said, Mr. Chair, we are here to provide you an agency overview for those members who are not as familiar with the Department of Public Safety, and then also to present the governor's budget to the committee as
Thanks.
Well. And for the record, my name is Mona Doman, Commissioner of Public Safety. So the overall mission of the Department of Public Safety is to create a safer Minnesota for the people who live and work here. Our goal is to protect citizens and the communities in which they live. In all of the divisions across the Department of Public Safety, our efforts focus around prevention, preparation, response, recovery, education, and enforcement, with a focus on saving lives and providing efficient and effective services to the people, all while maintaining the public trust and developing strong partnerships with public safety officials across the state of Minnesota. Our agency is unique in that we fall under the jurisdiction of two different committees, Transportation Policy and Finance Committees, and then the Policy and Finance Committees, and then the Public Safety area, the Policy and Finance Committees as well. And under Transportation, the jurisdiction is Minnesota State Patrol, Office of Traffic Safety, Driver and Vehicle Services, Sheriff. Office of Pipeline Safety, and then the Administration and Related Services at our agency, which is like Human Resources and Fiscal and Internal Affairs. And then under the divisions under the Public Safety jurisdiction are the Division of Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement, the State Fire Marshal's Division, Office of Justice Programs, Emergency Communication Networks, Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and then the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Our total base budget for the Department of Public Safety for fiscal year 16 and 17 is as follows, for a total of $650,657,000, broken down by appropriations from the trunk highway funds of $191,107,000, out of state government special revenue, $127,622,000, highway user tax distribution funds of $20,836,000, miscellaneous state special revenue accounts, $118,669,000, and then the general fund of $192,423,000. And our expenses for fiscal year 16-17, by category, out of the Transportation and Public Safety divisions, are transfers of $71,192,000, local assistance of $128,220,000, payments to individuals, a small percent of 1%, $3,638,000, total compensation of $305,233,000, and then operational costs of $142,374,000. And so that's the basic overview, and I'm going to turn it over now to Deputy Commissioner Mark Donaski to give you agency overview information and the governor's budget.
Thanks. Thank you, Commissioner. Welcome, Deputy Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. As Commissioner Dolman mentioned, we're kind of split in two, but obviously all of our divisions fall under the jurisdiction of this committee. I'm going to go through all the divisions rather briskly because I know we're short on time, and so we would certainly answer questions. We have the subject matter experts, the division directors are all here, too, if there's specific questions that we can't answer.
Thank you.
And so we're going to start off with the administrative and related services of the Department of Public Safety. That includes our Office of Communication, the Commissioner's Office, our Human Resources Department, our Fiscal Administrative Services, our Office of Technology Support Services, and our Internal Affairs Division. And after that, we have the first recommendation from the governor, the change item. Agencies were instructed to include a 1.8 increase to total compensation each year in their base budgets. This recommendation is intended to allow agencies to maintain their current level of agency operations. And so you can see that the request is for $718,000 in FY16 from general fund, $1.448 million in FY17 ongoing general fund, $3.32 million in 16, which is special revenue and trunk highway, and $6.737 million for fiscal year 17 and ongoing special revenue and trunk highway. The first operational division is our alcohol and gambling enforcement division. You can see their mission is to protect and serve the public through uniform interpretation, regulation, and enforcement of the state's liquor and gambling laws. They provide stability and integrity to the alcoholic beverage and gaming industries through the management of licensing, education, regulation, and enforcement. And that division is divided into two sides of the house, alcohol and gambling. Alcohol provides regulation and enforcement of alcohol laws, issues and approves alcohol beverage licenses and permits to ensure uniformity. It monitors brand label registration to ensure products are imported, manufactured, and sold legally in the state of Minnesota. It provides a one-stop shop for information and support to local licensed officials in the alcoholic beverage industry. It has a staff of 4 investigators and 5 office administrative staff. The gambling enforcement side ensures tribes maintain compliance with tribal state compacts via casino inspections and audit reviews. Completes investigations of lawful gambling, fraud, and illegal gambling, provides information and assistance to the gaming industry, public, law enforcement, and provides timely licensing and background investigations for the gambling industry. Funding for AGE in FY16-17 has a budget of $1.58 million per year in general fund and $903,000 a year in special revenue direct appropriations. Next is our...
Commissioner, what's the staff complement for AGE? Is that the same? Oh, 4 investigators, 5 administrators. Okay, never mind. Thank you.
Our State Fire Marshal's Office. The mission of the State Fire Marshal's Office is to protect lives and the movement and property by fostering a fire-safe environment. Their funding for FY 16 and 17 is $4.487 million per year in special revenue direct appropriations, and that's primarily the fire safety account. Fire marshal services include investigation, enforcement of state fire codes, regulation, emergency response, data collection, and public education on fire safety. Next, we have the Office of Justice Programs.
Oh, and Commissioner Danaski, just backing up, the fire safety account is funded by a little surcharge or a tax on homeowners insurance, correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
All right, thank you. All right, sorry, continue.
The Office of Justice Program's mission is to provide leadership and resources to reduce crime in Minnesota, improve the functioning of the criminal justice system, and to assist crime victims. Funding in FY16-17 is a general fund direct appropriation of $35.8 million per year. In addition to programming, OJP administers state and federal grants to nonprofits and local units of government totaling $50 million per year. Some of the services that OJP provides are crime victim reparations, crime victim justice unit, grants to local programs for assistance to crime victims of general crime, abused children, battered women, domestic violence, sexual assault, and an emergency grant program. They conduct training and communication. They operate a statistical analysis center, and they provide justice and community grants to reduce crime, delinquency, drug abuse, and violence. Next is our Emergency Communications Network. Its mission is to utilize emerging technology to provide the most comprehensive emergency communication networks available. By developing professional partnerships and collaborating with our customers, we can deliver customer-focused network solutions that enhance public safety. Funding for ECN, as it's referred to in FY16-17, $63.639 million from the 911 Emergency Services account of the Special Revenue Fund. ECN services on the 911 side, they collect a monthly fee which is assessed on all wired, wireless, prepaid wireless, and packet-based telecommunication services, contracts with telephone companies to provide the 911 networks, administers grants to public safety answering points, which are commonly referred to as PSAPs, and those are typically the sheriff's offices that receive the 911 calls and then dispatch, and they develop they are developing a migration strategy for the next generation of 911. On the armor side,
I'm sorry. Can you just explain what that is? Migration strategy for next generation 911.
Mr. Chair, the next generation 911 is the next phase of 911 services. One of the things we're going to talk about in just a half a second, as we ask for increased spending authority, the next step in that is actually moving from just 911, dialing 911, to actually move to text 911.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
The ECN services on the armor side, and armor is Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response. It's the new statewide 800 megahertz trunk radio system that most public safety agencies use in the state. They implement a statewide standards based on shared digital trunk radio communications network, as I said, for state and local emergency responders. They're developing Minnesota's bottom-up local and regional governance structure. And again, for the members that are unaware, ARMOR is governed by a statutorily established body called the Statewide Emergency Communications Board, commonly referred to as the SECB, that has representatives from across the state that manage the ARMOR system. And they are implementing, ECN is implementing a statewide interoperability program. In the ECN area, the governor is recommending increased spending authority for ECN. The increased spending authority will help ECN implement that text to 911 project, which is a priority for the Federal Communications Commission and the deaf and hard of hearing communities. It also help update the hardware components of the armor system backbone, which are over 20 years old, and it's going to help create a 911 interface to use as the state's GIS data set to accurately identify the location of wireless callers. This request is to increase the authority for spending by $13.413 million per year from the 911 special revenue account.
So those are revenues that are, there's no increase in the, is there an increase, or is it, are those monies that we just simply need to authorize the appropriation?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. It's just authorization for us to spend the money that's collected.
Great. Excellent. Thank you. And just for members' benefit, in case we don't, I mean, it seems like everyone knows, but sometimes people don't know, 800 megahertz trunk radio, that's the ability for our various public safety and emergency services to communicate with each other.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
All right, thank you.
Next is our Homeland Security Emergency Management Division. Its mission is to help Minnesota prevent, prepare for, respond to, and recover from natural and human-caused disasters. Their focus is in four areas. First is preparedness. Some of the examples of that we've recently talked about is railroad safety, school safety center, and they conduct radiological preparedness in the state with the two nuclear power plants. On a response area, they actually coordinate state response to disasters, coordination of statewide and volunteer resources, including bomb squads, special response teams, chemical assessment teams, emergency response, and structural collapse teams. On the recovery side, they administer FEMA disaster programs, they administer state disaster public assistance program, and they coordinate with local long-term recovery committees. They administer the federal mitigation programs, and they have critical infrastructure protection programs as well. Funding for HSEM is general fund-based at $2.3 million per year. In addition to their extensive program activity, HSEM is a pass-through for sizable federal grants. Funding sources through federal grants, mostly from Homeland Security and FEMA, are approximately $20 million. In FY15, a one-time general fund appropriation of $1.574 million and a special revenue fund of approximately $2.5 million for railroad and pipeline safety was appropriated to HSEM. And in FY15, initial funding was provided for the disaster contingency account. The governor's recommended change item for HSEM is to assist with the public assistance management system and staff. Last year, the new state program that allows counties and organizations to apply for disaster aid, even if they didn't qualify under the federal grants, was established. Unfortunately, HSEM cannot use the FEMA management systems that they have in place that they manage the FEMA systems or the federal systems with, and they can't use those systems on the state-only declared disasters. In addition, the budget funds two additional staff to implement that state disaster program. What the request is for is $430,000 for that disaster management system. That's a general fund one-time purchase. $65,000 ongoing for the annual subscription for that management system. And then $224,000 for staff to manage a system and to assist local units of government. Next, we have the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension's mission is to prevent, investigate, and solve crimes in collaboration with our criminal justice partners. For brevity, the BCA has four major program areas. The first is its investigative services. In the investigative services, that's where the special agents and analysts operate out of. It has a predatory offender registration and investigations program, financial task force, cold case assistance, internet crimes against children, missing and identified persons, and the Minnesota Fusion Center. The second area is the criminal justice training and education area, which houses the Amber Alert Program, the Minnesota Crime Alert Network, the DARE Program, the Minnesota Crime Watch Program. It offers statewide law enforcement training, statewide internet safety educational program, and it's where the Minnesota duty officers are housed. And for the committee, the duty officer is the 24/7 operation where local units of government can call the state of Minnesota for any types of services that they may need. The third area under BCA is a forensics area. Forensics has laboratories that include drug analysis, nuclear and mitochondrial DNA, firearms analysis, fingerprint analysis, document analysis, breath alcohol testing, toxicology, trace evidence. They have the combined DNA indexing system. They conduct crime scene services, and they also conduct training. And the last area in BCA is the Minnesota Justice Information Services. Within that section is the Secure Criminal Justice Data Network, the Criminal History Background Check Area, Statewide Crime Statistics, Maintenance Administration of Criminal Justice Information Systems. The fingerprint services are housed within that area. They also conduct technical support for our customers that are utilizing the data systems, and they conduct training and auditing. In funding, a direct appropriation of $50.2 million in FY16 and $44.8 million for FY17. The general fund, $48 million in FY16 and $44.8 million in FY17. Trunk highway funds, and I have to apologize, our slide is correct, is $2.266 million. We have several initiatives under the BCA. The DPS initiative is the top initiative for the Department of Public Safety this year. It primarily covers our investments in our laboratory and investigative services. And as most of you may know, the BCA provides these services and supports our local communities across the state. This BCA investment initiative is significant because it will increase our staffing so we continue to provide specialized investigations and support to our local partners, increases staffing so we can continue the high quality of evidence analysis in our laboratories, and allows the lab to implement an effective replacement and upgrade program to bring its equipment to a current status by the year 2020. In the investigations area, the governor's request is for $1.6 million per year for the digital forensics unit to address the increased workload related to crimes against children, cybercrime, and other computer-facilitated crimes. $1.5 million per year for additional staffing to address predatory offender tracking, child pornography investigations, and human tracking. And $600,000 per year to develop a financial crimes unit to provide coordination, experienced criminal investigators, analytic services, and forensic support to investigate identity theft and fraud. In the area of our forensic laboratory, the ask is for $550,000 per year to increase the number of latent print examiners to decrease turnaround time, which is critical to local law enforcement partners, because early identification and investigation can lead to the quick apprehension of a suspect, save law enforcement resources, and clear the innocent. $300,000 per year to reestablish the mitochondrial DNA lab, which is valuable for testing badly decomposed bodies or skeletal remains for identification. And this type of testing is also used in criminal cases on challenging evidence such as hair and blood. $800,000 per year would allow the BCA to implement an effective replacement and upgrade plan that would bring our equipment current by the year 2020. There's currently more than $2 million in instrumentation and equipment that's being used past its normal life expectancy. And then we're seeking $350,000 per year for supplies to allow the laboratory to maintain its current testing capabilities and case acceptance practices. And the final BCA initiative is for live scan replacement. Live scan are devices that capture an individual's fingerprints electronically and automatically and then submit them to the BCA, unlike what you've seen on television programs where they used to take and put fingers in ink and then roll them on cards. The new method is to have an electronic device that captures those fingerprints and transmits them electronically. It's used for identification of persons and processing. It allows a person's identity to be known in a matter of minutes. Criminal justice professionals can make real-time decisions concerning individuals with whom they're interacting. As fingerprints can also be present at a crime scene, the fingerprints collected during the booking process are also available to be used to identify who was and who was not at a particular crime scene. The BCA maintains and disseminates more accurate, timely, and complete data when fingerprints are submitted to them electronically. We're seeking $1.3 million per year over the next 4 years to replace 138 live scans that are reaching the end of their life cycles. And now, Mr. Chair, we'll move into the areas that are transportation related. First, we have the Minnesota State Patrol. The Minnesota State Patrol's mission is to protect and serve all people in the state through assistance, education, and enforcement to provide support to allied agencies and provide for the safe, efficient movement of traffic on Minnesota's roadways. The patrol has approximately 807 full-time sworn and non-sworn personnel. They have an annual operating budget of approximately $87.9 million. And as you can see, that total comes across from Trunk Highway, Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, General Fund, and Federal Funds. I won't read through all the services, but you can see that there are a number of different sections within the Minnesota State Patrol that provide services to the citizens of the state and to our allied partners. There are three change items that the governor is recommending relating to the Minnesota State Patrol. The first is the increase of state trooper escort rates. This proposal recommends changing the statutory rate charged by the State Patrol to assist with the movement of oversized loads or traffic control needs to more closely reflect the annual operating cost of the service. The proposal also allows the commissioner to set an average rate based upon the actual cost per fiscal year. Because the rate is actually set in statute and doesn't cover the actual cost incurred by the department, this is actually impacting the State Patrol's budget at about $145,000 per year. The second item is related to capital security. In order to provide better security based on need and risk assessment, the governor proposes to eliminate the current Capitol Complex agency security contracts and provide a direct appropriation to the Department of Public Safety. Security coverage for the Capitol Complex agencies will be enhanced under this plan. Moreover, and as the chair knows, this is a recommendation of the Advisory Committee of Capital Area Security, and the amount is for $1.5 million per year from the general fund. And then lastly, with the State Patrol, the State Patrol operates three fixed-wing aircraft and three helicopters to provide traffic and public safety services. The three fixed-wing aircraft that the State Patrol has are approximately 33 years old. The State Patrol has been preparing for this proposal for several years by selling three of its aircraft and one of its helicopters to offset the cost of a new aircraft. In addition to that, they'll also be selling one of the three that they have, so the fleet size will stay at six. The remaining proceeds from those sales with the sale of the additional aircraft combined with this proposal will allow for the purchase of a new, efficient, safe aircraft and the technology needed to operate it. And the request is $975,000.
One moment. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the, page 25 on the slide, it says eliminate the current Capitol Complex agency security contract. What is the dollar amount of that current contract?
Mr. Danask.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the contract that it's talking about here are with a number of agencies, and the total is that $1.57 million.
Okay, so they match up to your request. So it's not an increase, it is a redirecting of those funds. Is that correct?
That's an excellent question that we're grappling with right now, Senator Kiffmeyer. The discussion among the Capital Security, what do we call that committee? It's the Capital Security
Advisory
Committee.
Advisory Committee.
is exactly that. So there are all these small contracts with all the agencies that occupy the buildings around the Capitol campus. They provide the security services via a contract with the Department of Public Safety, and what that then allows for is for highly individualized levels of service on a building-by-building, even floor-by-floor basis, and creates a real patchwork of different levels of security based on what an agency wants to actually pay. And so the idea is that We would just simply fund security services directly, you know, through this direct appropriation, this $1.57 million per year to the Department of Health. They would just kind of establish the standards and the procedures and the protocols, the level of safety that folks can expect would be uniform throughout the Capitol complex, no matter what building you're going into, what agency you want to go see. And so then the question begs, then do we have to go to every agency and short them by this really small dollar amount, because now we're just picking up those services right for them? And it's a struggle, because it's kind of a, you know, the answer should be yes.
Yeah.
And we should just do that. But then it becomes a matter of, you know, like, so how much per agency? How do we back those dollars out? It becomes a bit of an administrative tussle. So we're having that discussion among chairs and agencies and trying to figure that out right now. So it's a good question.
Yes, I can tell. Okay. All right. Well, we'll let you work that out,
right,
Mr. Chairman. Right. I'm sure the staff are well capable of doing such a detail.
Right. Well, we do have one $2,000 appropriation out of the Trunk Highway Fund that we make to...
Well, now that's different.
To motor vehicle services that they don't actually... We give it to them. $2,000 per year that we give to them for something that they no longer do. So if we can chase $2,000 around, we can probably chase these dollars around. But
too bad it's not $2 million. We could get a noise barrier.
There we go. Yeah. I have Senator Reinert and then Senator Franz.
I open up the can of worms.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just, maybe in a slightly less complicated, more direct way, be remiss if I did not encourage the department, as they look to acquire a new fixed-wing aircraft, to consider the only one made in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you look at the specs and the RFP proposal, I think it should be one that Cirrus could be competitive in making a bid on.
Mr. Donask.
Mr. Chair, Senator, in fact, while we can't specifically pick an aircraft, we have had conversations with Cirrus. They're very interested in moving into the law enforcement field, and they've talked to us. So while we can't specifically say, because the selection process requires we do something else, but we have been in contact with them.
Of course. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And they've talked to me as well, as you can imagine. So thank you.
Well, for sure, we should make sure that the specs don't exclude Cirrus.
Yes, that would be my...
You know, we had that problem once with Met Council, and our specs excluded the acquisition of New Flyer buses, which was pretty surprising. We got that remedied, but it was a problem.
Thank you.
Senator Franzen.
Quick follow-up, because I did have a similar question that Senator Kiffmeyer had. Because when I saw that this slide on 25 on the Capitol Complex agency security contracts, I was wondering if there were private agencies, because I was under the impression that Capitol Security also does some things with private agencies as well, not just agencies that are in the building or the Capitol complex. So maybe this is for a later time when we delve into this in particular, but I'd be interested in how you currently deliver those services at the Capitol complex, and if there is any external private firms that are being used for providing some of the Capitol security. It's more in the weeds, but I'm still interested in that.
Mr. Donaski.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I can't say specifically, but I think a few years ago, several years ago now, there was a law passed that security on the complex had to be conducted through the Capitol Security Division. So I'm unaware of any private contracts.
Thank you.
Senator Franzen.
Well, the last thing is even consulting. I mean, anything that would be farmed out, if you will, because I think there is some consulting done externally. And I would think that would be healthy to have external people come in and tell us, you know, some private security firms that are doing more global work that can also advise us.
Well, Senator Franzen, there is a fairly thorough and rigorous contract with a security consulting firm that's done a huge analysis of the security needs for the Capitol campus. We should share as much of that report as we can with the committee. I know a lot of it is protected data for good reason. We don't want to, like, give everyone away our secrets, but so they could, like, defeat our security systems. It's an excellent analysis that's been undertaken over the course of a number of years now, and that work has been finalized, and actually the recommendations coming forward in this proposal, as well as some recommendations that are going to be advanced to the Capital Investments Committee for bonding resources, flow directly out of that work. Mr. Donaski, did you have anything to add?
No, Mr. Chair, you're absolutely correct. Mr. Chair, if you'd like, we could certainly provide the executive summary or the portions of the report to the committee that are available, if that would be helpful.
That would be great. I think the committee would be interested in that. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Anything further, members? Okay, continue.
Mr. Chair, moving on to the Office of Traffic Safety. OTS's mission is to prevent traffic deaths and serious injuries by changing human behavior in Minnesota through policy development and support, stakeholder engagement, program delivery, leadership, research, and evaluation. OTS receives an annual appropriation from the Trunk Highway Fund of $435,000. It's a required match which allows OTS to secure federal funds, grants, and one-time monies that annually amount to approximately $17 million. I won't read through all the services, but OTS offers a number of services and coordination of traffic safety programs in the state. And with our partners in public safety, they do an outstanding job. And you're probably aware that Minnesota has the second safest record in the United States in fatalities per 100 million miles driven. We've been in that position for a couple of years now. There's one item under the Office of Traffic Safety for recommendation, and that is to increase the fine for second and subsequent offenses for texting while driving. Obviously, none of the money goes to the Department of Public Safety. OTS has a research that shows that increased fines can, in fact, be a deterrent to texting and driving, and it also helps ensure that Minnesota State remains competitive for federal grants. Next, we're moving on to the Driver and Vehicle Services.
One moment. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question I have for you is, we'll ensure that Minnesota remains competitive for federal grant dollars. Can you explain how a second offense for texting, which this, that's not the discussion here, but how does that interface with competitive or federal grant dollars?
Mr. Donaski.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'll do the best I can, and if I get it wrong, I'll ask the director to step up. Under the new MAP 21 and under the programs, in order to be eligible for grants for additional enforcement activities, the federal government is going to require that there's enhanced penalties for texting and driving. They see distracted driving as a major issue on the highways in the country. And so to encourage states to take it very seriously, a part of the program is if you want to apply for these dollars, you have to have enhanced penalties.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just a little bit, because I know there's a little bit of change in this as far as whether if a state does not want to do something with a federal law, that they can't penalize them and remove funds. So that's where I'm kind of going at. How does that interface with this?
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Donna Berger, the Director of the Office of Traffic Safety with the Department of Public Safety. This would be an additional grant. It would not be a penalty. This would be an additional grant that the Office of Traffic Safety would be eligible for if this passed, to be eligible for specific distracted driving funds to educate and enforce distracted driving. So it's an additional grant. We would be eligible.
Thank you. That helps.
Need to say something for the record. I don't think it is a good enough reason to do something only because it will qualify for federal dollars. That just does not cut it with the public or, frankly, with legislators. Something should already be a good idea, and it should be something that we want to pursue as a matter of public policy, public safety, you name it. And then, you know, if it qualifies for federal dollars, great. But if we're in the business of chasing federal dollars for the sake of adding to our budgets, that's just not a good enough reason to do something in the state of Minnesota. I mean, we run into this. I'm speaking out of experience. We run into this all the time when we're talking with various engineers and folks who want to build things in our state. And they say, well, if we don't do it, we'll lose the federal dollars. And invariably, the response of my constituents is, so lose the federal dollars. We think this is a bad idea. That's not a good enough reason. So I just need to say that, you know, bullet point number three, just, you know, I just have to say it doesn't belong in the presentation. It needs to be a good idea to start with.
Mr. Chair, if I may, and I will The department agrees with you, sir. We were hesitant to put that on here. And Frank, the reason that we put it on, because we did. We looked at the fine. We looked at the research. But we also understand that texting and driving and distracted driving is a significant issue in the state of Minnesota. There's a lot of conversations going on about it. And looking at the dollars that are available to help the state of Minnesota in that program area seemed like a viable option to put that in. But we completely agree with you that we wouldn't do this just to get the federal dollars. We believe that it's the correct thing to do.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, moving on to driver and vehicle services. I know that DVS has been here many times. Their mission, they're committed to fair, accurate, secure, and timely service, what they refer to as FAST, through effective options, accurate collection of data, fraud prevention, effective collection of state revenue, quality information, and technical support. Driver and Vehicle Services has an annual budget of approximately $58 million. It has 538 employees working in 95 locations throughout the state. DVS collects more than $1.4 billion in state revenue annually. It's funded by the Special Revenue Fund and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And again, I won't go through all the services that are there. Most of you are aware of what DVS does. There are three proposals under the Driver and Vehicle Services area. The first is to increase the spending authority for Driver and Vehicle Services Division. We're seeking $600,000 ongoing from the existing accounts for staff salaries, benefits, et cetera, and an additional $1.2 million from the Vehicle Services account to cover increased MinCor costs for purchasing, delivering, and mailing plates, registration stickers, and notices. The second item has to do with – I'm sorry, sir.
Mr. Donaski, I'll return to a question that I asked. I've asked now I think a couple of times. This is around the Trunk Highway Fund appropriation that is made to the Department of Vehicle Services or Department of Public Safety for the purpose of contracting with MinCor – that's the prison industries, by the way for manufacturing the plates. But then, you know, of course, the plates are sold and the plates go out to the public. The receipts then land back in DVS coffers. But the Trunk Highway Fund, or whomever, is it the Trunk Highway Fund or the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund? None of those dollars return to the Highway User Tax. So why did we make that initial? Why isn't this just simply a self-supporting proposition? Why do we take money out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund at all to do this if we're contracting with MinCor to manufacture the plates and then the plates are paid for by the public, then you get to hang on to the money to get back for that purpose? I just need to understand that a little better. I'm trying to guard against leakage out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, we ideally want those resources to go build roads.
Mr. Chair, we have Director McCormick that can perhaps answer that question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And there is a statute that requires that the money for the issuance of production of plates comes out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And this arrangement was worked out when DVS went to fee-based special revenue budget versus having money just from highway user. And we had driver's license, as you may remember, was part of the Trunk Highway Fund. All services were paid out of the Trunk Highway Fund. And so the original proposal in the it's a Minnesota statute 168.381 allows for an appropriation for the plates to be given to us, but it doesn't ever pay for all the costs associated with the plates. And so as a result, that is why we are requesting additional funding from our vehicle services special revenue account so that we can pay for all the costs associated with it. Right now, we're we already are spending an additional amount of money in addition to the money we get from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. It costs us at least $12 million a year to produce plates, produce all the registration renewal notices, postage, and all the things, and delivery, and having inventory at all of our deputy registrar locations for purchase by state residents. And so that's why we're asking for an additional appropriation from vehicle services, because right now we have to hold positions vacant in order to make sure we have enough money to pay for all the plate production costs.
So will this be sufficient to pay for the production costs, and we don't, won't have to do this cross-subsidy out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund anymore?
Mr. Chair, I think this we aren't asking for any additional appropriation, but we do get the one appropriation from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. What we're trying to say is that now we would take any extra money that we need to, in order to issue the plates, would come from the vehicle services account.
My basic question is, can we stop making appropriation out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund for this purpose? Mm-hmm. Can we stop that now? Stop doing that going forward for this purpose?
It's, Mr. Chair, it's an ongoing appropriation that we have right now, so then we would have to look at asking for more money from the vehicle services revenue account,
right,
in order to pay the $12 million a year that we're spending on plate production, because we're not spending that all that money. We're just subsidizing Highway User Tax Distribution Fund at this time. So that would be something that the...
Is there enough money in the driver vehicle services... or in the driver services or the vehicle services funds to do that?
I'd have to, Mr. Chair, I would have to talk with our finance director to ensure that.
Well, as I recall, there was a pretty substantial balance in the last budget cycle for that purpose, and that was there was a direct rate on those dollars and sent over to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to support some of their budgetary requests, you know, money that was raised specifically to support vehicle services activities and driver services activities. And because there was this balance sitting over there, fee-based balance, it was completely sent over to Bureau of Criminal Apprehension for completely unrelated activities, activities that should have been funded by the general fund. So I was really curious to find out that, in fact, we're taking money out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund to basically subsidize the activity of driver services and vehicle services when there was sufficient money to do a raid on those funds last budget cycle.
Mr. Chair, we certainly can look at that issue and bring that back to the committee if you'd like, and we can get back to you on that. I wouldn't want to make a guess without going through it with our finance director and our staff, so I'd be glad to put that together and we can bring that back to you.
I would appreciate that. Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was thinking of the exact same thing there. Even on a regular basis, I looked at $58 million in their budget that's appropriated them, and then they bring in revenues of $1.4 billion. So $58 million to $1.4 billion, that's a great big amount of money. Where does that go? Because that's a special revenue fund, so does it go somewhere else besides this $58 million? But I would agree with you that certainly we shouldn't be taking from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. It seems appropriate to do that. But my curiosity is the difference between $58 million and $1.4 revenue, what happens to the difference?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I'm not sure I heard your entire question. So you're asking about over the $1 billion we collect. We collect that money for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and for the other funds. We only keep the money to operate. Our budget is this filing fees that we keep, which is a very small amount. The money that we're collecting basically in that is the registration taxes that go to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund for transportation purposes. So that money is nothing that we keep. We just keep the filing fees that are attached to our transactions just to pay for our services. Our budget is basically paid by driver services special revenue and vehicle services special revenue, and those consist of the filing fees that are added to the transaction, either $1 or $1.75 added to a transaction. So.
Okay. And so, Mr. Chairman, that gives me a better sense of how that all works. But then you get appropriated from your special revenue account, that 58, and what the chairman is talking about is that you've still incurred some reserves beyond that. I think the biggest thing for me, too, is, though, that, you know, we've talked about this before, the processing, timely processing of these things, and it's a very administrative thing. So while I certainly want them to use their funds judiciously, even to what they are, I certainly don't want our Minnesota folks who are paying fees for the support of this service having delayed service just because we haven't appropriated it to you, whether it's salaries or technology or anything else. And I don't know if MnLARS is coming along yet, but especially for that, I want to be sure that our customer folks out there who come to get this and pay the fees for that get the service as well.
Mr. Chair and Senator, thank you. That's what we do use those services for, and that's why we're asking for the additional special revenue so that we can ensure that we have the appropriate staffing for completing those services.
Mm-hmm. And MnLARS is coming along nicely. It's coming. Hang on. It'll be here. It's on track.
After 10 years, Mr. Chairman.
They're on the schedule that they set forth for us a few years ago, so I'm not alarmed yet. So, and I think they're doing a good job. Thank you. Continue.
All right. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Next, we have the International Fuel Tax Agreement, and we're requesting a reinstatement fee. IFTA, as it's referred to, is an agreement between states and the Canadian provinces to simplify the reporting of fuel use by motor carriers that operate in one or more jurisdictions. Other IFTA jurisdictions collect a reinstatement fee from these carriers to pay for staffing costs associated with the administration of IFTA regulations. In this case, if somebody is suspended or revoked from their IFTA license, then we have to go ahead and reprocess it through, and all this is asking for is to put an administrative fee on that reinstatement to cover the cost of staff. And then lastly, under the DBS area, the proposal is to create a data services unit within DBS. This unit would conduct compliance audits, issue corrective action plans, and maintain and monitor user agreements. The budget proposes adding another staff person to assist CUR staff in providing legal advice and administration of the DBS data practices program, and the request is for $90,000 a year. And then lastly, Mr. Chair, we have our Office of Pipeline Safety, which is actually housed within the State Fire Marshal's office. The mission of pipeline safety is to protect lives, property, and the environment through the implementation of a program of gas and hazardous liquid pipeline inspections, enforcement, accident and incident investigations, and education. The Office of Pipeline Safety operates on a budget of $3.133 million per year, and that comes from special revenue from inspections and from federal funds. And with that, Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions if we can.
Great. Wow. You did a great job. Record time. Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, just a question, and I know we've started to talk about this topic, and I'm not sure exactly where it fits in, but, you know, it strikes me, and it, I know it does you, Mr. Chair, because we've had some hearings just on this topic, you know, related to pipeline safety is rail movement of oil safety. You know, and I'm wondering where that fits within the department, where you see an additional emphasis on that,
you know, where you might see a program like the Fire Safety Center that Lake Superior College supports for aviation fires fitting in. I mean, where can we train more local officials who may have to respond to these and right now have little to no training to do so?
Thank you. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Reinhart, and I appreciate the school up there, too. I've been up there many times at the Fire Center. It is an outstanding facility, and I'm confident that it will play into the training curriculum as we move forward. As the chair knows, the Department of Public Safety, by legislation last year, was directed to commission a report on rail and pipeline safety in the state. That report was completed and has been issued, and I'd be happy to get a copy of that report for the members of the committee as well. There were six recommendations that came out of that. We are proceeding with those recommendations as we speak. The initial one is familiarization training across the state of Minnesota, mm-hmm. particularly in the area where the pipelines and rails run. As that goes out, Senator, and as we start to move on and get all the familiarization training done, we will start to move to those next levels where we have advanced training, and then we start to get more hands-on exercises, more collaboration, more regional work going on with that. And I think that's where we'll start to talk about the regional approach to have equipment and training sessions.
Mr. Chair, just a brief follow-up. So, Mrs. Commissioner, you feel that your budget right now is adequate for you to do that first step of the familiarization training?
Mr. Chair, Senator, as a matter of fact, the report recommends that the funding or the resources allocated last year for this remain the same for now as we proceed forward with our training programs and start to gather information from the rail and pipeline companies so we can really get together and start to work more closely together and understand, number one, get a better grasp of what the problem is, and then also get a better understanding of not only what the resources are in public safety, although most of the public safety agencies work quite well together, combining that with the resources of the rail and pipeline companies and having understanding of who does what, when, where, and why before we start to spend some more resources is really where we're headed this year.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. I don't really expect an answer. Maybe the best answer would be that we can have some conversation within the department about it. But and I've talked to Ms. McCormick about this some months ago. Your discussion about fingerprints and so on brought to mind a situation that, and actually more than once now, where we have individuals that are drivers, truck drivers of some sort of hazardous material, and by virtue of federal law, they have to have background checks, including fingerprints. And the short of it all, as a, for instance, if you live in Rochester, Minnesota, we're not a big enough town to do fingerprints, apparently, because you have to drive to Roseville to get this all done. And if you live in Harmony, you got to drive to Roseville, and so on and so forth. And it's not your problem. It's a federal issue. But the question is there any sort of way to think about any level of accommodation for these kind of people that I guess probably exist all over Minnesota that need fingerprints but really can't get it done on a local basis?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, yes, I remember our discussion, and I've talked to several other legislators about it. And the issue is it's, you know, there's a company that's contracting with the Federal Motor Carrier Association, and we have no ability to contract with the federal government. They, you know, they issued their RFP and they have a contract with this company, and they have just a few places within the state. Years ago, Congressman Oberstar had really worked hard to have more places within the state for fingerprints, but then I think the Federal Motor Carrier just decided that they, you know, they had a different contract since then, and so that's why truck drivers were used to being able to go to places that were closer to where they lived, and this is a change that just took place last year that we weren't aware of until we started getting complaints about it. So there's really nothing we can do other than, you know, talk to federal officials and at least, and I think we have talked to our own director for FMCSA that manages the Minnesota FMCSA office about it, but he said that he's not aware of any changes coming in this regard. So,
well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It just does seem like a total solvable problem. I mean, it's just fingerprints, and they do them all over, but somehow at least for these individuals, they have to endure some hardship to get them done. And I suspect that's true of northern Minnesota, southern Minnesota, so on and so forth.
So Senator Sandrum, so I can understand.
Well, and so
issue a little better. So in the past, truck drivers who needed to have their background checks done, get their fingerprints submitted, right, et cetera, could do them at somewhere close to where they are.
Ms. McCormick may know better than I, but I think at one point, for instance, you could get them done in our city. And I'm not speaking on behalf of my city. I'm speaking about a broader issue because it's all over. But I think that is true. Mm-hmm. And now there are only limited locations, apparently.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard about it. Is the Trucking Association working on it?
Not to my knowledge.
Oh,
but
they should.
We just pick it up, from constituents.
Mr. Chair, it only involves those that have the designation for hazardous materials. Hmm. And this came up after 9/11, and at that time there was quite a press to have a lot of these offices for people to get the fingerprints. But apparently the contract, this company that they have now, just doesn't have the number of facilities that they used to have. And that's why we're getting complaints, because people were used to being able to get them at closer locations. So I can certainly talk a little bit more to our FMCSA Minnesota director and then maybe report back to the committee in an email or something along those lines if you'd like.
And
Ms. McCormick, if you could tell us who that person is, maybe we as legislators should have some correspondence with that individual. Commissioner Doman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sinjim, we also will have conversation back at the office, because we have live scan machines all across the state of Minnesota, and I don't know if there's any way that the federal government would allow for us to interface to allow for fingerprints to be taken at any of the locations at the local county jails or police departments across the state, but we can have that discussion. Yeah. And see if that might be a viable option.
Ms. Chairman, thank you, Madam Commissioner. It seems like a pretty logical kind of approach, but somehow within the framework of government, we can't come together. Hopefully we can.
Yeah, if live scan machines can be deployed to public safety agencies around the state and officers can just find out in the field. I think I spoke with you and you were in my office about how various gyms and various membership organizations are allowing folks to gain admittance through the bioscan technology. Just hold your finger on a little dealio, and they know who you are just like that, and they let you in. Moving backwards, it just doesn't make any sense at all. So,
Mr. Chair, and I think we all, you don't have to drive down the highway very long or very far to see some trucks with hazardous labeling on them, and so this is a fair audience.
Right. Very good.
Mr. Chair, we'll take that back and have further discussion as it pertains to our rules with the BCA, with the live scan machines and the collection of fingerprints, and then with the federal.
Right. Excellent. Right. Anything further, members? Nope. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You,
this
Mr.
was
Chair,
a great
members.
Presentation. We learned a lot. Yes. We'll have more discussion as we start to deal with the budget and taking action on the budget. So thank you very much. With that, members, I see Senator Scalzi is here, and we do have a quorum. And so we will adjourn the Transportation Public Safety Finance Division, and I will...